Peter. You were so highly missed by this committee yesterday. I nearly said, now I realize this was all men that I welcomed. I nearly said, we missed your pretty faces. Now, I would have said handsome faces if I was not looking at you. Now, it would be probably a misrepresentation of facts if I say handsome. They say, Honorable Matlala, your apology was highly understandable because of the nature that you like deployment. Because you were given a title that probably expired today. You had to go there and exercise the little power given to you. We have dealt with a number of issues. I'm not sure. I thought this was a continuation of yesterday's meeting. You will bear with me. English has never been my good language. I did it it was a second language on higher grade board. So I used to believe that when a meeting is adjourned, it actually means it's continuing, and when it says closed, it means you start a new one. Now I've realized that adjournment has got different meanings. We are supposed to be today dealing with the entities. I would have loved to make a request, and I'm sure probably there will be agreement that one, in the presentations that will be made, we allow all the entities to make these presentations, and then we ask questions. But my limitation with that process is that they can't guarantee me that they can share time efficiently amongst themselves, and therefore, by the time the last one finishes, we might have forgotten the first one, what the issues it might have raised. So I think we will continue in the manner that we have suggested and ask questions of clarity on each of the presentations. But like I say, I did arithmetic. There was no maths where I used to be. And therefore, I always count. I know in meetings, someone will say a meeting starts at 10, you'll do this and finish at quarter past 10, and then at quarter past 10 you do this. There is no break in between. I don't want to do that. It actually means the time we have today, how many hours? Probably is less than 6 or 5 hours, because there's stretch breaks, there's other things. So in order to do justice, I will request that in the presentation, let's try and be precise. Just remind what we did last time, and then go on the key issues that the committee has to take consideration on. But most importantly, try and focus and deal with mainly what are the issues that relate to the process we are dealing with, which is mainly the expenditure pattern. Now, you were unfortunate that I came after all of you were present. So it means we're not going to change how the program goes. Otherwise, I would have started with the first one to arrive. So bear with me that I was not here when you arrived, the first one arrived. So we will start with the Council for Geoscience, and then we will have the MinTech, then we'll have the trader, and then the regulator. So Babu Skosan, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and the Honorable Members, colleagues. Chair, I'd like first to apologize on behalf of the chairperson who cannot be with us. He's traveling overseas. Chair, in my team, I'm going to present with Dr. Mahai, who's the COO of the Council for Geoscience, and Leonard Matsipe, who's the Chief Financial Officer. The outline of our presentation, I'll start with the mandate and the focus areas. The COO will do the national priority projects, and also touch on non-achievements in those areas. The CFO will deal with financial report, and I'll conclude with the human capitals and also the challenges. Chairperson, the mandate of the Geoscience Council is based on the Act as amended in 2010. The mandate is to do the offshore and onshore mapping of the country. We also have to do a basic geoscience research on the nature and origin of rocks. We also do the collection and curation of geoscience data. We also display some of these in the museum, National Museum in Pretoria. We also render geoscience knowledge and advises the state accordingly. We also manage a number of national facilities. For example, we manage the seismology network of the country. We also have the core library where all the boreholes in the country are stored. We also render commercial services to augment our revenue. These we do inside the country and also across the borders, especially in Africa. Our focus areas is based on minerals and energy, the environment and water, the engineering, geology, as well as geohazard, which is seismology. These, and then mapping of the geology in the country. These programs, they are solution-driven to address the environmental, economic, and social issues of the country. The national priority projects, we've got five projects that we're currently undertaking in the country. The first one is the promotion of mineral exploration investment. This project is to revive to promote the investment in the country in looking at the mineral deposit potential that is in the country. We've already started in a number of areas, and we've identified the targets. The CEO is going to deal with that in details. We have a shale gas project that we are undertaking on behalf of the government, and we're going to assess the environmental impact of the shale gas that is during and then exploration, and also during exploitation, just to see what the impact it will have on the environment. We also have a project on mine rehabilitation of the relic and ownerless mines. These are the legacies of the old mining that we are dealing with to safeguard the safety and health of the communities, as well as to combat illegal mining in those areas. We also got a mine water management program where we're dealing with the issues of water ingress into those mines and also the pollution that these waters are causing to the environment. We also have got a project of microzonation of Johannesburg. This project is looking at areas, especially those that are undermined in Johannesburg, and also to look at the impact of the undermining in those particular areas, so that when infrastructures are put in those areas, they are not in danger of collapse or of being damaged during the seismicity. The COO will take over from this and deal in detail with this project. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. What I'm going to take you through is the big five questions that the CEO has already outlined. The first one that you are seeing in front of you here is the promotion of mineral exploration and investment. Here is the Council for Geoscience really going around to look into the potential minerals and commodities that could be mined in the future. The project started in 2013 and it is starting to shape up in terms of some findings that we have found as we continue to do our sampling. What you are seeing here is really some of the facilities that the Council for Geoscience have in terms of our geochemical sampling. This is our helicopters and our people are really on the ground doing the actual work. It really shows the importance of having your own facilities to conduct the kind of research that you'd like to achieve, particularly for the benefit of the country. And of interest and really something to share with you, honorable members, are the discovered targets. We have done some work around the Northern Cape where we mapped the alluvial diamonds. The red spots that you are seeing there is really an indication of areas with high possibilities of alluvial diamonds. We are still to check the quality and the in-depth in terms of how much of these alluvial diamonds do we have around the Northern Cape, but these are our first findings that we can proudly report on. Another focus area has been research studies on shale gas. Here we're talking about research well where we are saying, can we come up with an environmental baseline of where we are in the Karoo so that when shale gas is to start, we are able to say these are the impacts before and after. And it will help also in terms of guiding the regulations as to what needs to be paid attention to when we come up with such regulations. Obviously, we're working closely with the Department of Environmental Affairs because this project at this stage is more environmental related. The derelict and ownerless mines project, honorable members, what you see in there is when we started this project in 2012, the map that we are seeing on screen now just of it. Most of these sites were not confirmed. Today is 2016. It's really looking green to show that most of the work has been done. And we can safely say when you look at the map on the right, it clearly indicates how we ranked these ownerless mines in terms of risk. Now, we were talking about billions some years ago. When we started with this project, you know, the billions that we're talking about were with regard to the liabilities that is required to make sure that we rehabilitate these particular mines. Because it was of the opinion that all of these ownerless mines were going to require rehabilitation. And we are proud to say, as we were doing our field work, it is quite clear that those sites that are going to require rehabilitation agency are only the red dots. Those are the high risk. The green ones that you are seeing there are those sites that do not require rehabilitation. And this is really more than 50% of the 6,000 that we talked about. So this is a positive story to share with you. going into the rehabilitation program itself, some of the research area that we're looking at is when we look into some of these mine dams and we start saying, should we be rehabilitating all these? The response that we are now looking at and the research that we are now conducting is that no, not all of these mine dams should be rehabilitated, because we can actually use some of these mine dams to come up with some commodities, reclaim them. In some instances, we could use the very same mine dams and perhaps come up with low-cost type of bricks and come up with low-cost housing. This is the research. We are still doing some investigation, and I'm positive that it's going to assist us in dealing with the legacy issues of previous mines. The other project of importance at the Council for Geoscience is the Mine Water Management Project. Here we are looking at the solution-oriented mine water management. I've already touched on the mine residual pollution solution to say that some of these challenges we don't necessarily have to rehabilitate, but we can reclaim or where possible use this material for alternative uses. And this project goes hand in hand with the project that looks at potential minerals for the future. We have combined the two instances to say, should we be able to say there's potential commodity, say for example manganese, we need to be saying around that area, do we have enough water to sustain such operations should that mining take place? So that's what also this project is looking into. Not necessarily all the legacy issues, but potential future mining. What you're asking here as some of the work that we've done in the past is to make sure that the problem that you are seeing on the left does not persist by coming up with an ingress control lined material, what you are seeing on the right, as a solution to try to address those areas that you find on the left. And this is just one of those success stories that we have to prevent the ingress control. We have the microzonation, the seismic microzonation of Johannesburg. We have completed the center of Johannesburg as we speak. We have also completed the Kosh area. This is the rest of Orkney, Stilfontein. And with that, we are saying the results are quite promising, because what we are finding with this particular project is that can we be in a position to perform these studies to guide the emergency or disaster management to say, should there be an earthquake happening in those areas where mining took place, how prone our infrastructure to the seismicity? And the findings are very promising, and we'll be sharing the report with the public. Unfortunately, this project is coming to an end in this last financial, in this particular financial year, and we are hoping that we are going to go to the funders to request for the extension of this project in perhaps the areas around Rustenburg, where platinum mining is taking place. We do not only do work within the country, we also do work out of the country in pursuit of the Africa agenda. What you are seeing in front of you is some of the international projects that we are working on. In some instances, we partner with the likes of the French Geological Survey, the British Geological Survey, looking into the geological mapping of Namibia, Malawi. We are also doing a supervisory role in Burkina Faso and Cameroon, and the EU, the European Union project, looking at potential feasibility studies on the extraction of the rare earths on the mine dams. This map that you are seeing in front of you really reflects all these great areas where the Council for Geoscience has worked. And the green ones are the current projects. This is in Namibia and Malawi, countries where we are currently working in. I'm hopeful that in future you are going to see more of these green dots in the remaining parts of Africa to really show that we are helping our African brothers. With all the good stories, I should thank honorable members. It's also good to reflect that we did not necessarily achieve in all those things that we wanted to achieve. One of the things that I'm going to mention here is that when we look into our employment equity, it's quite clear that we are still battling as an organization. to make sure that we get a number of females on board. And this is work in progress. We, as the leadership of the organization, going an extra mile to go and headhunt some of these ladies in the universities around. And we are also having a challenge with regard to the number of scientists as opposed to the total number of staff. Again, it's linked to the top part where we are saying we need to be going out there, recruit, particularly in our local universities, to make sure that we get more scientists on board. We are a science institution, and in terms of our staff complement, it should reflect as such. The number of projects with external collaborators, Honorable Chair, in the past we used to have many of the small projects. Hence, we had this number or long list of external collaborators. But now in this case, we've changed our approach in terms of how we do our work. We talk of programs. When we look into, say, the water project, it's no longer a project, it's a program, because it's looking at all other facets relating to mine water. You know, the issues of legacies, the issues of future mining. And we also did well, this one is also linked to the external collaborators with regard to the number of strategic science partners. Obviously, this one is also linked to the number of projects we have. In this case, we are no longer looking at individual projects, but we are looking at programs. So the same goes for, the same explanation goes for even the last bullet point.
My name is Divela Matsepe. I'll be taking you through the financial performance of the Council for Geoscience in the previous financial year. We are talking here, we are talking good work that, that the Council is doing. We are talking projects. We actually focused on five projects. The Council's mandate obviously goes beyond five projects. Why I'm stating this is coming from yesterday where we are talking about funding of the Council for Geoscience, talking about surpluses. I'm going to try and clarify all those issues, and as well as address some of the issues that were raised by the AG to tell where we're coming from and how we have done to actually resolve them. The slide on the board, on the projection now is the income side of where we're getting the money. Nothing can happen without money. Obviously, you've got to get it somewhere. We're getting a government grant. This government grant, I'm going to unpack later in the following slides. The quantum that we had last year was $466 million, and of which we recognized $332 million. In there, so it's a number of all those ring fence funding, MTF projects, and our baseline, they are all concocted. I'll actually unpack that so that you can see where the Council gets its funding. Second to that, we've got our commercial revenue stream. This commercial revenue, the previous year we had targeted to make $40 million. We've actually surpassed that in that we are able to make $51 million. Now, in accounting, there are other incidental, I would say, income streams that are not something that you can actually foresee or foretell. We call that sundry income. It's not in accounting; those are things that come up as and when they do. Most of that sundry income that you see, we've budgeted $3 million. We've achieved $28 million. I'm going to underline that because I need to come back to that. Because it's something that we didn't have at the beginning of the year. It's not money that we didn't spend, it's money that we didn't have. It arose majorly from two sources, one being foreign exchange gains, which are very much dependent on the strength of the rand. If I was to do the same calculation that I did last year, at the end of the year, at this point in time, it will erode some of that. Actually, 8.7 of that will go away. And 19.9 million of that is actually interest that is derived from those grants that we've received, that they are ring-fenced monies, we're keeping them. That money is not the council's money. It's money that we still have to go request from the from National Treasury, the use thereof, that we should actually use it, because it's money generated by a particular funding stream for particular projects. It's not money for the Council for Geoscience. But in accounting, we have to consolidate all those and reflect them. We in total generated an income of 412 million vis-a-vis the planned 509 million. Where is the money being spent? Being a science institution, our major spend costs, especially personnel costs. We've done very well in that we've actually spent 186 million where we had planned to spend 196. The 10 million budgeted for was actually in case that we need to pay performance bonuses. We didn't pay performance bonuses because the performance wasn't that good, and we didn't have the money to do so. So that is that saving there that you see, that we have actually budgeted 196. There's no money for that. We don't get it up front. By the way, we have to work for it, and then only after we've actually paid. So we couldn't achieve that. As I've already shown, that we have already have a deficit in the income that we intended to generate. In terms of bursaries, we were able to sponsor bursaries, and up to 1.4 million, we had budgeted 2.5 million. We've learned the lesson that we have to do two intakes, because some of the people don't make it, and then because we had one intake, then to redo it, it's only going to be the next year. So some money gets left, in which we could have spent. Now, for you to make 40 million, you need some investment money. That's commercial project cost. That is the cost that we spent to make the 51 million that we've made. We made 28. We spent in 28 million to make that 51 million. Now, we've talked about the overheads. The CEO has talked about the cost shares and all the operations of the Council for Geoscience, and the cost related, obviously, to the projects that are not commercial. In that 142 million, it's gone down in proportion to the extent to which we couldn't afford to recognize the grant. We've attacked at 206, we are at 142 million. In total, the costs were 358 million, and over and above that, which is on the balance sheet, we've spent 40 million on capital, that is recapitalization, trying to buying equipment and fixing our ventilation system and such projects. At the end of the year, we reported a surplus of 54.2 million. I'm going to pause there on that surplus of 54.2 million, because I understood that members need to bring it into context. It's not money that we have started with. Say if we had 100 million and then we remained with 54 million and we have done whatever we could have done, the 54 million is left over. It's not that kind of money. This is accounting, it's accounting profit or accounting surplus. I talked about 28 million at the top there. Money that came because of interest, money that is not our money, it's in that 54 million, it's 19.9 million. I was talking about foreign exchange gains. That's 8.5 million. It's in that 54 million. Over and above that, we've received transfers to the amount of 18.9 million that we use, that we've recognized for our ventilation system. It's an ongoing project. In total, it's going to cost around 50 million. So 18.9 million. Is included in that. Why the cost is not showing on the expenditure is sitting on the balance sheet. So if you add the three components that I just mentioned, which are not from operations, they leave us with a profit that is really from operation of 6.7 million. That's putting it into context. That is the money that we could remain with after having generated it from commercial ventures. So that 54.2 million surplus is an accounting figure. Yes, it's a surplus, that's what it's named. But if you look, did we have it at the beginning of the year to spend? No. We had to, we actually, 8.7 million, we only realized that you've got it at the end of the year when you do calculation in terms of your strength of the rent. So those are accounting concepts that we have to abide by, but they might be so misleading in that they might tell that we've got money sitting that we haven't used. I hope I've covered that. And then I said I'm going to be unpacking the grant allocation. Yes, we're receiving a lot of money, of our money from the state. It's in terms of baseline allocation, the previous financial year we received 165 million. And if you look, 165 goes 184. The next year it goes down to 177, and there's a year when it goes to 200. And that is what is supposed to be the investment of our state into that phase, the base of that chain, that value chain. That is what that money is for. It's sustaining the Council for Geoscience. But now you can see in that. There are other components. Already, my colleague here has mentioned that we've got money for mine rehab, we've got the water, mine water management money, we've got shale gas money, we've got stimulation investment money, and then that is the capitalization that we had a lack in that we could do that ventilation system that is necessary for the lab and try and fix our building. But this money is not for us permanently. We're not sitting with it permanently. It's meant for 3 years. It lasts over the MTF project, a period. And if you look on the total government grant, instead of it increasing, it actually is decreasing. I mean, you would expect that we should be growing, given inflation, given everything else. Because of this short-term project that lasts for a period of time, after they are completed, we really are struggling. Now, how do you plan? You need your human capital. I mean, that is, science needs people. So who leaves their job to come and join for the Council for Geoscience for a period of a year, 2 years, or 3 years, and leaving a permanent job? That is why we're struggling with recruiting scientific human capital. On the next slide, I'm trying to show the relationship between what we are receiving as what's supposed to sustain us, and just show the salary bill of the people that you've got currently, not even adding those, just the current ones that you've got. The actual figures in the current year, the reported year, is 187 in personnel costs. And the government grant received as baseline, that is mine that we can use for assessment, is 165. What this means that before we even pay work, we already have got, we're standing on a back foot, we've got a deficit of, we had a deficit of 22 million in the previous year. So first we had to generate that 22 million to cover everybody so that we don't retrench everybody, so that everybody's paid for the year. And then over and above that, generate money for operations. There are normal things that are not within those ring fence projects that need to carry on. I mean, there will be your gardening, there will be all those. All the other services that we have to maintain just to have the infrastructure of the council functioning needs to be funded. And there's no funding for that. We have to struggle to generate that. And then on this slide, I'm trying to show the various components where, how over time, since 2010, since that data session, we are in the trend in revenue components, where it comes from. That's the analysis thereof. If you look now, currently, we used to have a quite a strong input from commercial adventures, but now it's been eroded. It's actually reflecting the current economic climate. And then we are more dependent on that baseline, which you can see, it's almost a straight line. It's not growing. It's an inflationary increase over the years. Now, we are more dependent on this five projects that we call MTF projects in the red. and they are not sustainable in the sense that they are in the short term. They are short term projects, they are fixed term projects actually, 3-year projects. So they're planning going forward. Even how do you expedite them? Because when you need to expedite things, you need enough capacity to do things. But now your hands are tied in the sense that people don't come to work for 2 years and leave their jobs and come and work for 2 years and leave. They don't want it. They want stability. And that we can offer in the Council for the Future. Now, this is the personnel cost. With it, I'm trying to show the trend as well, that there isn't any particular point where we had a significant jump in salaries and paid people. If you look, if you take a line there, you'll see that it's a gradual increase. It's almost inflationary as well. Now, there's a surplus. Every time we're reporting a surplus, as I've already explained, that the current surplus is totally abnormal. It's incidental because of factors out there that are beyond our control. And then now, where do we get the money to buy the computers? Where do you get the money to buy the equipment and all the necessary infrastructure to be able to do our work? How do we maintain it? All this, for instance, the 6.7 million that we've made here, that is actually ours, and it's actually accumulated over a period. We accumulate the surpluses over a period, and then when we are able to use them for something that is impactful, we do a planning thereof. I'm going to pause there. Maybe I might just talk because people have got the presentation in front of them. The point I was making is that we don't have any particular money that is meant to recapitalize our equipment, our ability, our infrastructure, in order for us to continue our work. Now, with all the surpluses that are not actually 1 year, you will make because of this factors that are beyond our control. The year before last, we made the loss of 14.7 million. So it varies year on year. But now when we've accumulated enough, we use it to capitalize our infrastructure. Now I've shown the next slide which says utilization of accumulated surplus, that's the caption thereof. And then it's showing what money the council has got and for what purpose is this money going to be used. For instance, the first line, the first bullet there, where it says working capital and business growth capital investment, I've already shown that for you to make money, you're going to spend money. And I know that, there are payments to be made. You need that kind of about 43.2 million just to keep in the bank all the time to meet your liabilities as and when they become due, especially the short-term ones. And then we've got a very archaic ICT infrastructure. That is the major number one risk in the council, and I actually am very excited that this was raised even yesterday in the sense that we have we are information intensive in nature. Our environment is what is valuable, our assets, is mainly information. So ICT is important. At the moment, we need to spend about 50 million to just take care of that problem. It's an ancient problem. We wanted to address it in 2006, 2008. We couldn't because of the recession. Now we have accumulated some money to try and address that. But that is over there. It's not something that comes from that 54 million that we've seen there. And then there is a challenge in terms of office space. We've got offices in Limpopo. We've got a museum in town. It doesn't even look like our own. So we've realized that instead of renting, it's better for us to actually invest in that. As the property appreciates, rent is cost. You're spending it. There's no way you're going to recover that. So when you are investing in a building, it's an investment in growth, and you actually have got control over that area. You don't struggle. So this is what is one area that has been identified that we should invest our surpluses in. There are vehicles that we need to do our field work. And then we've got the budget. Yes, I talked about computers. We put about 11 million there for that. And then there is human capital. We can hardly attract because of our salaries. We've got to transform you've seen that we can't reach our EPT targets because we don't have the necessary space to create additional human resource capacity so that we can employ the right races into our organization. 44 million has been preserved for that. Now, this ring fence fund that I talked about is part of the money that we are keeping in. It's sitting in all this money, like the 100, and each project has got its own bank account. The monies are sitting there. We cannot actually use them for anything other than for what they are intended for. So in total, if you look at the cash and cash equivalents on our balance sheet, they come to 321 million. Now, the next slide is just for information. It shows the trend when we had the recession. As we go on, now we are coming from a situation where we deprived ourselves in terms of recapitalization. We are now trying to get the best equipment for our scientists. It's part of our retention strategy. Scientists love their toys. Without their toys, they just leave. Now, as the next slide shows the financial position in terms of the balance sheet. It's a steady. You can see we've got assets, and they are. It's sustainable. It's not going up and down. But now the particular hike there in this reported year is because of that ring fence fund. Now, taking the matters of the Auditor General. In the previous financial year, we reported that we had not the previous financial year. The year before us, that is the year ended 31st March 2015, we reported that we had irregular expenses of the amount of 1.4 million. This was as a result of our system, our APEC system. We had one service provider. We actually have modified our system, and then we believe that nobody else can actually work on that system except for that particular person because he was the one involved in the modification. And hence, going out and finding somebody else would be like two people in one pot, and at the end of the day, you might end up without financial statements. But now, the Auditor General was of a different opinion. We acceded to that, and then we disclosed in our financial 1.4 million in the expenditure. The 119,000, that is a part of the two, the we're now reflecting 217 million this particular year. So there's been an improvement from 101.4 to 217,000. So now the 119 comes from that finding of 1.4. It's part of what that 1.4 because it's one contract and that was work already done with the Auditor General Register. So it's not a new transaction. It's part of that 1.4 that was already called. Now there is a new one, that 98,000, which is arose because we are required to, when we buy textiles and clothing and, you know, for our protective PPE, we need to put on our request for proposal sales that our suppliers disclose their local content percentage. So we have since rectified that,
and that problem has gone away. And I do believe, if you've heard yesterday that the Auditor General said there is an improvement, it is of course major. We don't want to be seeing things like irregular expenditure, working hard towards that. In terms of financial outlook, we manage our cash and well, we are managing our liabilities well, managing our assets well, so we can meet our liabilities when they are due. If you can see that liquidity ratio is saying 1.9 to 1, the ideal is 2 to 1. We are almost there. And then I've already talked about the strength of our balance sheet that I've shown on the graph there. Now, income generation, where are we going to get our next money? In the short term, as I say, before the year 1819, we are high. But after the year 1819, as I've shown, those short-term projects come to an end. And after that, we don't know where our bread is going to come from. So we have to rely on commercial activities, meaning that what our mandated functions are going to suffer. That is basically what it means. And that talks to what was said yesterday when they say we are actually at the bottom of the chain, of the mining chain, and we should be, for it to flourish, we need to do our work. Now, if that is not done, we actually are strangling or choking the whole value chain. Thank you.
Thank you, CFO. Honourable members, the human capital, as a knowledge-based institution, human capital is very important to our organization, and we need to maintain a very healthy supply of scientists and to revive our pipeline. Our HR human capital key strategic focus areas is based on the transformation of the organization. The organization has been losing a number of scientists in terms of age. The most knowledgeable and experienced scientists are getting older, so we've got to build our pipeline from the younger generation. Also, the retention of skills, we need to retain our scientists, especially those that are skilled in terms of giving them very good projects and also remunerating well. In terms of training and development of the young scientists, especially from the previous disadvantaged areas, we are very aggressive in these areas, and we giving a lot of bursaries, we providing internship, mentorship programs, and experiential training, and also we've got the geological mapping tool, where we train our scientists how to map in-house. In terms of the democratic profile of gender, as it stands, the male component is 56% and the female component is 45%. The ideal situation, we want to maintain the 50-50%, and we're moving into that direction. In terms of race, from 2010, as you can see, the component of the black race is increasing and the white race is decreasing. At the present moment, it's standing at 75% blacks and 25% white. In terms of gender, from 2010, we had 61 to 39. 61 males, 39 females. Now, as we stand now, we've got 56 males and 44 females, and we're moving into that direction where we want to maintain the balance. In terms of composition of bursaries by gender, as I've mentioned, that we want to maintain the balance between the females and the males. In 2015, we're at 59 to 61, which is 59 males, 41% females. Now, as we speak, we've got 34 males and 66% females. So that pipeline is going to address our balance. In terms of bursaries, number of bursaries that we've issued, in 2010 we were at a peak. We had about 29 bursars, full-time bursars that we provided with bursaries, and we dipped between 2011 and 2015. Now, as we talk, we are at 29, and the number will increase as we have budgeted for more intake. In terms of the budget, our budget as it stands now is at 2.5 million, and we want to increase it to attract more scientists in that area. The number of internship programs, in 2010 we started with 7, and as we speak now we are at 71, and all those interns, we are training them in-house, and some of them, those that are successful, that are very good in the organization, we end up employing them. We do this in collaboration with Mining Qualification Authority. We give them 2-year internship program, and those that complete well, and then they are good for the organization, we employ them in the end. And in terms of the mapping school, as I've already mentioned, that our mapping school is based in Limpopo, and we give the training of 1-year program for our trainees to learn how to map. We give them introductory course, and once they complete, those that are very good, we employ them. And that's the end of our presentation. Thank you very much for listening.
Yeah, you are telling a very strong presentation. It even tempers with the IT of Parliament. Present up to you. Honorable members, I appreciate him calling to you. There's the presentation. Thank you very much. Questions of clarity? Comments? Honorable Schmidt? Honorable Piginini? Honorable Matara? Honorable Lorima? In that fashion. What is your hand up? What happened yesterday? You come to this morning. Last time you raised your hand, I don't know. Oh, okay. We won't ask the hostage what was it based on. Honorable Smith?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Only two issues. The audited actuals of 2015-2016, the government grant there dropped from 466 million to 332 million. Those figures, if I read them correctly. Was that part of the tightening of the financial belt, where everyone's financial revenues were diminished or were lessened, if I could call it that word? And then secondly, your page analysis of government grant allocation 2015-2016. You say mine rehabilitation, there's figures of 37, 43, 38 and 42 million. Are these figures supported by other grants or revenue by other departments? In other words, is this figure the figure that in total is what is spent by the DMR and the 5 institutions in totality? We did get an indication yesterday about the rehabilitation, but an indication as to what you spend that money on. Then water ingress report project, is that the Florida water ingress project which was referred to yesterday, or is this another project, or is it a generalized project? And then thirdly, stimulation of investment in the mineral sector, what exactly do you do? That's very important, it was raised yesterday as well. But what exactly do you do to stimulate investment? Thank you.
No, thank you very much. Chair, I'm very happy with this document, Chair. I think there is a work done, Chair, but I'm having some few comments on it, Chair. See, my interest is around issues of shale gas. I really wanted to know how far are they with the exploration and environment or exploration and public participation processes. I think, you know, when you do public participation, it goes with challenges automatically, particularly around matters of environment. So that's one. The other one, Chair, you can see that when we were there visiting them at a particular stage, there were matters, you know, there were the old system around laboratories. Now, they could not really go quicker to test something and get results. They must wait for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or a month. I think now, through the money that they're having now, I hear that they want to improve that particular system. Am I right or am I wrong? And then if that's it, I'll be happy if they can really speed up to improve IT systems in that particular geoscience. Those are the two issues. But the last one, Chair, that I'm happy with, they started with seven issues of learnership, internship, and all of that. You can see that there is an improvement now. They talk about 71. So it makes us really to be happy that they're able to add something in this phase must fall process. Thank you very much.
Yes, Honorable Chair. Mine also, Chair, relates to the intern program. We're very happy about that. But one of the things that I want to raise, Chair, because there are some sharks outside there, is there a program, a realizable program? a realizable program, an achievable one, to make sure that these interns, after the completion of their program, they're not going to be headhunted by some sharks out there for greener pastures. Because in my view, you've made well from 7 to 71, but you must, how do you keep them? How do you keep them to make sure that there is a fire burning in the institution? You must not lose them, because you might be wasting money to train these people. After some 2-3 months, some big sharks come and take them one by one, and you are left with nothing. So it's a fruitless exercise. So you must make sure that you have that realizable program. If you don't have an answer now, you must not say, yes, we've got that program. Because I might say, where is it now? So if you don't have that, say, we don't have that program, Mr. Matala, on behalf of the committee. We'll provide that answer in the next, in 2 weeks' time. Don't manufacture an answer here. Mr. Msisa, I'm very serious about this thing. Number other one, Chair, relates to, you see, in all the presentations, not all of them, but this one and others before this meetings, no presentations was made mention of the national development plan of this country. They're just telling us how far they are. They don't tell us how are they implementing some of the things emanating from the National Development Plan, SONA of last, this year, after all. All the presentations I had from the department, not only this department, all the departments. Nothing has been said about the NDP. How far are we in terms of implementing some of the things that are there in the NDP, National Development Plan of this country? Yeah. Yeah. You are saying. Why? It's my colleague. No, this man is putting words in my mouth. The 10-point plan is mentioning 10-point plan. His name is 10-10. Eh? The other one, Chair, the communication strategy of the department or the entities here.
You see, they are doing very well in all the provinces, in particular Northern Cape, and there are some projects going on in Limpopo. I haven't seen any, how is your communication strategy structured? I haven't seen, you see, there are boards, comrades, there are boards in the country, billboards. They've been utilized by Musimai man, he would be laughing, smiling to fleece. And we are not utilizing, we must utilize these boards for the benefits of the people of South Africa. They don't know what is this Council for Geoscience, MINTEC. I haven't seen the board talking to us, MINTEC. I haven't seen the board, unless it's there in Pretoria. But in other provinces, it's not there, where you're operating. That there is MINTEC. What is this MINTEC? People must know what is MINTEC all about. What is it that we are going to benefit? How is this MINTEC and all of you, your Council for Geoscience, what is this Council for Geoscience? You must tell the people that Council for Geoscience working for you. This is how far we are. A big board. Unlike you leave the all the big boards in the country utilized by Muslim money, laughing, smiling, to please. You must utilize them. You have got a budget. People must know about these things. So what else is about these things, Mr. Caesar? You are the head of the department. So we must utilize those billboards. Some of them are there empty. But we have got the government here that is watching for people. People must know what is Council for Geoscience, what is MINTEC, what is all this, the ones that are going to present up. Utilize those spots. People know that there is this thing. Well, how can I get these people? Where can I get them? Utilize those billboards for the benefits of all of us. These are only three, Chair, for now. Thank you so much.
I'm sure Honorable Maimane has got the right to smile and be on a billboard. Honorable Florim?
Not just a right, Mr. Chair, but plenty of reason to smile. just two questions. What does the DMR tell you about the prospects for being funded properly to meet all your statutory obligations? What are the prospects? And expanding from that, what would you like to see allocated to you in the MTEF so that you could fulfill those obligations? How far are you short? And the second is just a thing about the work that you do about mapping. Slide on page 8 about the discovered targets, the diamond stuff work particularly. It seems to me that it would be a very useful thing if I was a mining prospector to get my hands on this information. How is that information let out to people? Who gets it first? Can people leap on that and immediately get prospecting rights in these nice red areas that you've marked on the map?
Okay. I hope they won't complain when you put your smiling face on the billboard and then say Council for Geoscience.
Chair, I will answer some of the questions. I will start with Honourable Member Lorimer, the mapping information. The projects that we have started with, I think the first one that we'll be writing a report on, we did write a report on the first one, I think it was in Limpopo, and then the next one is Tugela. This diamond one is the third one, which is we're going to complete. The information that we compiled thereafter, we sent to the department. And that department will decide how that information is used in terms of rights that needs to be granted and all that. So we're doing that in on behalf of the department, and we submit to the department, and it's up to the department to decide how it is disseminated. Honourable Member Ntate Matlala, on strategy communication, billboard we don't use board billboards. I have to agree to concur with you. We don't use billboard. We do have signs in the organisation at Silverton. We've got bigger signs, but not billboards. Signs that shows where the council is. I think the council is known mainly by the community for earthquakes. Whenever there's an earthquake, it's where the community knows who responds and who gives explanation. Where's the earthquake, where it happened, and all those kind of things. It's where we get a lot of publicity in terms of radio, media, asking about, you know, where did the earthquake and what happened, you know, how did it happen, the locality. I think it's where we get more publicity. But other than that, I agree with you. As a science council, we are a black box at the present moment. But once we start developing funds, as we have started with the surplus, we'll start be making bigger big billboards so that people can know more about us. I think we were financially constrained previously, so we had to live within our means. Putting a billboard is not very cheap, so we have to have funds to do that. But I think we'll be going to that direction. In terms of national development plan, if you look at our project, promoting of investment in the country, that target generation that we're currently doing, it's precisely to address that. We want to, we don't just do it for the sake of doing it. We do it so that, you know, companies can be able to invest in the mineral industry. People have already said that the country is overexplored and there's nothing to find. We look at it differently. There's a lot to find. So that will revitalize the investment in the mining industry. So that's one of the aspects of the NDP. The second one, the shale gas itself. When it comes to energy mix, you know, generating of alternative sources of energy, shale gas is mainly to address those problems. Although we are looking at the environmental side of things, but shale gas will be a game changer in the future, and we're looking at those kind of resources to supplement our energy mix. Coming to internship program, at the present moment, the students that we are training, that we are giving the training, most of them we absorb. Most of them we do absorb. I think I would say that we are lucky at the present moment because of the current financial situation. The companies are instead retrenching instead of employing people. We are employing. Well, on the other side, we are employing. But when the economy picks up, I think we're going to face some problem because we are the easiest to pinch from because we don't pay better than them. But at the present moment, I would say we are keeping them. But when the economy picks up, probably we're going to lose it. But as far as I was in the country for the past 5 years, I think we've been keeping them up to so far. I think we're lucky. And the other thing, I think because we give them a very good program, and also we give them a lot of projects that are of interesting nature, they prefer to stay with us because we've got long-term projects. Whereas companies, you know, they focus on production and all that. So I think they're lucky at the present moment. We are keeping them. I think I've covered most of the questions. The other colleague will take over from that.
The funding prospect from National Treasury on an annual basis
we do put proposals to be funded because we looked at it. There was one in particular that is always there, that is to fund the amendments of the Act. We've got our Act amended to do additional services, and there's no money coming forward to do that. So there is one particular standing request that is ever going to National Treasury, and it never receives a positive response. We in this particular year, we've put in a request not even for new for new projects, but you have the ones that are ending in 2017-18. That if you look at the slide where it says analysis of government grants, it shows the baseline where I'm saying it's only a marginal increase, inflationary increase. The rest of the money that we get from the state is project linked. So the decrease there is because the project is finished or the is not continuing. So hence you see this up and down movement in our total grant. But now the prospects thereof are they've actually communicated to us that they won't be taking on new proposals to fund in the following MTF period, but they will consider resuscitating this thereafter. The fiscus, as you say, there's very much constrained, and hence we're not getting funding. Instead, they were looking into cutting the current baseline allocations by 1 or 2% to try and get money out of the institutions. And with us, it's just one of those impossible exercises to do, given the fact that we start on a back foot. We start with minuses, then we try and catch up from commission and trying to end the managing gap. What is required? What do we want? I've particularly mentioned when I say outlook, that in the short term, because we still got this MTF project and the capacity is limited, for the next year it will be fine and the year after. But in 2017-18, we've got a big deficit there when you compare the government grant baseline with our our personnel cost. It shows 50 million deficit just on the personnel that we've got, never mind increasing it. So that in itself is a challenge. Over and above that, we need about 30 million for just the keeping of the organization. If there are projects that we have to do, then we'll do those, because we'll be keeping the infrastructure and the current people that are there. Now, to function optimally, we've put a very comprehensive proposal. It needed about 700 million funding, so that we can look into mapping the country and as well going offshore. So if there are proposals, we actually put it to national treasury at the level of funding that is required, to actually not look at particular projects, but to map the country fully, so that there's that investment that is necessary in our country to do as a base for mining industry is there, and then the country can contribute significantly through mining to the GDP, and then as well as offshore. I mean, we've done almost nothing in the offshore mapping space. So the figures are available. If we can actually send the figures subsequently to show exactly the proposals that we have sent to National Treasury in regard to the required funding to actually impact on the industry.
Sorry, could I just ask that those proposals are sent through, Mr. Chair?
Honourable Chair, there was a question relating to the target generation, the mineral stimulation project. This is a project of national imperative, and we are aggressively working on this particular project so that at least by the time when it comes to an end, we should have something to show on the table to say, for the past 3 to 4 years, this is what we have discovered. Just to look into the slide that I'm having here to highlight some of the areas that we are looking into. We are in Mpumalanga, the Sabi area, where we are looking at the rare earths and some gold deposits. We are also around KwaZulu-Natal. There's still also potential for some gold deposits. And then we are also concentrating into the northwest. This is where alluvial diamonds are. In particular, the slide that I showed talks to some detailed findings of specifically where these alluvial diamonds are. And then we went further to look into the Northern Cape again, where we are looking into the resources such as the thorium and uranium to assist with regard to the nuclear build that the government is now talking about. And we're trying to quantify and map those resources to see how much do we have really. And we are looking also into the Eastern Cape. In the Eastern Cape in particular, there are no precious metals like any other provinces. But there we are looking into the aggregate materials, where we could look into our future infrastructural development and use those materials to make sure that there is business happening from the Eastern Cape. So this really gives a feel of where we are as a Council for Geoscience in terms of our national footprint in this particular target generation project. Of interest now, when we were looking into the known commodities, we also discovered the manganese, the rare earths, the lead, zinc, and silver, and it's really an indication that through proper investment into our programs, there's likely to be hope in the mining industry into the future. There was another question relating to the water project in particular to say, look, you've been talking about this water project, and the only thing we hear about from the water project is the Florida Lake Canal in terms of the ingress point. Is this the only area that you are looking at? Is this the old Florida Canal that you've heard about 3 years ago? Going into the slide that talks to the water project, it has since changed shape. We're talking about solution-oriented mine water management. This includes the ingress points, but we are also looking into the passive treatment technologies to look at, I will make an example, areas such as Emalahleni where gold mining took place. The volumes of AMD, they is not huge. At the same time, when you implement passive treatment technologies, you are likely to cap the problem. The other point that I've highlighted here on page 12 is the mine residue polystyrene solution. With the mine residue, we're talking about mine dams. Mine dams that we are saying, they don't necessarily have to be rehabilitated, but they can be cleaned. They can be reprocessed and get some of the minerals from them. In some instances, we can actually clean them up and make sure that we use this material for brick formation. We're pursuing research in that space. The last bullet point, if I'm to expand on it, this one talks about, this is the one that I said I'm linking it to the target generation type of a project, to say as we do the work in terms of mapping, can we convincingly say to the department, you can map, you can mine here? We need to be quite proactive as the Council for Geoscience to say to the department, yes, there's potential mineral for gold as an example. But in addition to that, we also need to flag to the department to say, are we going to have shortages with regard to water? This area that we're talking about, is it sensitive in terms of the environmental sensitivities in terms of fauna and flora? So we are more having an integrated approach towards this mineral mineral stimulation project. So it's not about individual projects apart, but they are quite integrated in terms of approach. So it's no longer the Florida Lake Canal, it's broader than that. The other question was asked with regard to the shale gas. With shale gas, we are talking about the research phase of the shale gas. When we talk about shale gas, people start thinking about environmental sensitivities. It is the responsibility of the government through the Department of DMR and Council for Geoscience to ensure that we come up with informed regulations where in future we'll be able to say this is the environmental baseline before shale gets to place, during. And I mean, when we are working in partnership with the likes of PASA, Petroleum Agency of South Africa, where we should be in a position to say, look, where are we in terms of the environmental sensitivities around the Northern Cape, where or Beaufort West, where this shale gas well is supposed to take place? We need to also indicate to say, can we sample all these existing boreholes and check the level of contamination in these areas, so that come the time when we come up with this research well to quantify the gas that we're talking about, we can have the baseline to which we can refer our findings to. So this is where we are. The type of project that we are involved in, it's unfortunately at a very high level, led by the department. And in terms of the public participation or community engagement, it is driven by the minister and the department. Therefore, some of the work is a bit on hold because we are expecting the department to find time to go engage the communities before we can do the actual work. So we are not going to be doing the work before we consult with the communities completely.
Okay.
Honorable Member Piccinini, on the laboratory, at the present moment, we've got a project on laboratory capitalization. We are buying equipment, we are building our laboratory. We are also even building an extra laboratory, which is for geotech. We found out that when infrastructure has been built, like roads, big buildings, there are these boreholes that they are drilling for, you know, to test whether the ground is suitable for building. That information is scattered all over the country. We don't know where it's stored. So we are going to have a laboratory that's going to test those things, and also a core shed where we're going to store all that information. So the laboratory has been built up, and then we are also extending that laboratory, the new one. So in terms of IT, the CFO has already mentioned that we're going to invest on ERP so that we know our systems, because of the knowledge base institution, we need to have people to access information online rather than really coming to collect copies. So that is going to be done in less than a year, so that, you know, we can be able to distribute information to the public without giving them hard copies. Thanks very much.
I hope Honorable Lorima will be able to. It won't reject him. Like the Samrati was briefing yesterday. Look, thanks very much. Let me just say this, and I think that's what the honorable members were saying, that the Council for Geoscience is at the entry point of the value chain in terms of the contribution to the system. I just want to check a few things, and this may not only be falling to you as an entity. Maybe an issue, again, like I said, Babum says that you need to consider. I'm phoned by Uskosana, last time you were here, you brought a structure, and we had a battle on the structure. Now, in your annual report, I'm not saying you are not supposed to be there. Sometimes other people will read when you say the board, because in this house we've got someone who is a CEO and a president at the same time. Now, I look here, there is a chair, and the CEO is part of the board members. The following one is correct. I don't have a problem where it's stated. But now, from the executive and to the board, I think let's say, I'm just saying, at some point in most of the companies, it has happened that the CEO feels that is equal to the chair of the board, and that's where battles start. when these two are in competition. So I would say when you put your board, my understanding, the CEO must be exactly on where it is on the executive board, as the head of the executive. Because the board is appointed, the CEO is employed. I'm just raising that thing. The second thing, probably, again, it's an issue that I would say it has to be looked at. And again, it may not necessarily be talking to the entities. Unfortunately, we can't go beyond our scope. It may not necessarily be talking to the entities in the department. But just to have a minimum sense on what could be the common flow when it comes to the establishment of the board. For now, I think the manner is happening is like everyone just say, okay, this is the procedure that gets followed. I'm raising this thing, let me be honest, I'm raising this thing because when I look, Babu Mzisa, he, out of is it 10 board members, ne, 6 of them are government official or within the state. Now you, the difficulty there, I once sat in a board and then someone was appointed in the board and was belonging to another entity. Now, the CEO says, look, I don't have a problem, but this person is far junior in the entity where he's working, but he's coming here to make me account as the CEO. It would have been better if it was a senior. I'm just saying that issue is always there. Now, when I look here, out of 10, 6 are from department. Maybe when you go to others and ask, it would be a different, that's the point I was saying to say, maybe a particular framework. I know each board is established according to a specific legislation, but I'm just saying again, in those high-level meetings, shouldn't we look at having a common framework? That is the first, that is one part when I do, and I'm saying it could be the same even on other and on other entities. The second thing, it's twofold. When you look on the part of the expenditure, there's always been this check of war. Being a person in the public service, there's a rule that says you shouldn't be remunerated. Now, please don't, because it's only one case. It's not singling one person. If you look on Prof. Hermanus and you look at the cost, it's not clarified. It's clarified just like a board remuneration. Now, one will have an understanding that CSIR, where it's working, is a public entity under the Department of Science and Technology. There could be reasons why this remuneration may not necessarily be about board remuneration. So I'm just saying that might be the issue that is not necessarily the same on other entities, but it could be a matter that cuts across all the other entities. But linked to that is that whether some of these people, when they are, I'm just making an example, when they are appointed, is based on the consideration of representation of departments, or is just a question of people whom you get because of expertise by location, because that's why I'm saying that criteria is not clear. Now, that the reason with that is that accountability level becomes blurred if those people are from the department. Are a majority, and whether when they are there they represent their departments or they represent their independent bodies as members of the board. I can't get that sense here, because at some point then you'll have the Department of Mineral Resources being at conflict because people are representing their legislative interest rather than the interest of, because my understanding is the establishment of the board, its main purpose is to extend performance of work that probably the department can't see to it from day to day. I'm just saying that issue to me, I think, but if I'm wrong, again, I think one will be tempted to be corrected. Linked to this is there a formula that exists? I raised this thing, I think, at some point and said, I think it's a treasure. They had this thing of categorization of entities. Do we have a categorization of entities in the department? Let me say why, so that tomorrow we don't have a problem. I'm looking that, again, please don't, let's deal with the principal matter. It will then help you so that we don't have this battle that happens. One, on the frequency of meetings. Two, it will help you to make a determination what should be the baseline when it comes to remuneration of board members. It will also tell you for what activities. I can tell you in one board, the chair will just walk there to monitor the CEO and then sign that he came to work and then go back. You see? Now, at the end of the day, the bill becomes higher. Now, if you look, for instance, I wouldn't know. That's the point. If you look, the chair has gone up to almost 400,000. Now, to some of us who don't know what's happening, we'll draw and say it's almost equal to a salary. And therefore, in terms of the tax base, it may not be regarded as an allowance. It's more like a remuneration. So I'm just saying that issue. It is the same thing even with other board members. I think there's one board member at some point last year was 152. The other this year is at 123, which means it might be moving towards the 152 and above. But you may find other boards that the remuneration arrangement is not the same with what you get, but all of them, they are under one entity. Forget about the amount, because the Auditor General did not see it. But is there the same formula that is applied across the board? I know some people, they even refuse to serve. They will refuse to serve with other boards, because if I serve to that, I can tell you when we're in KZN, when you sit in a board, the department is one that has got authority. But with categorization and the manner that it does, the reward system is not the same. And that made a huge fight for people to say, but we are doing the same thing. I made that example. I said, Council for Geoscience might be too small, but the nature of work it does might be too demanding and deal with issues of risk, but also contribution to the fiscal as an entry point to the fiscal. But you may find another entity that calculates on the basis of the size, not on the basis of the responsibility. So I'm just saying to me that issue here, we can't get a sense. One of the things I used to say that where I come, when people deal with finances, I just walk away, because I know there's always finances are treated with suspicion. You don't deal with finances on an objective manner. So I think that is the issue. On the contents of your report, I must be honest, is there a reason to be concerned? Because the business unusual is cut across as to why there's been a decline. And I must be honest, I will not agree with this notion that recruiting scientists is such a difficult exercise. It goes back to the point that Babus Kosane just raised now, to talk about, with due respect to Banda Bafana or Honorable Matlan, the aging in the industry when it comes to scientists. I see the levels of the increase in learnership and so forth, but I'm worried because in that decline, it may not be addressing the concern in terms of the problem of I don't want to say honorable man salaries, But we can see that you might be, I raised that issue yesterday. I said, for an example, when they were talking to, at some point when State Diamond Trader was raising a concern, it was about the fact that in the diamond industry, there seems to be a decline of young blood, if one were to use that, and the age seems to be much more higher than being an age that will say there's use. So that we can understand that, is there a future? All the issues of exploration and so forth, they may be at risk in terms of what has to be done if we don't attend. But I'm just saying, you can talk about customer satisfaction. The reason is the same one, MTF. A rural project, the reason is the same, why you've got this decline. Even when it comes to this notion. Because that to me will help us to understand the actual challenges. I think I can emphasize this one more. We have made this request. Yes, I think if CFO, you give us that guarantee, please. Maybe when we talk, we're not talking enough. It's not, to me, that is not the issue. I heard someone talking about Christmas fall. That could be correct. But that's just the expenditure side. Where are we generating? Now, if you don't have a focused investment on the generation of resources, surely you won't be able to fund the expenditure where there is demand. Because you are not putting enough and investing enough on what could contribute. Now, the risk, I think, for me, I'll be forthright, is that if we don't get this, it may not just be a question of getting enough. It may be a question that, which is an issue we may have a discussion at some point, whether these 50s, I understand how it has been generated, but for now, at our disposal, there's absolutely nothing that one could say is an expenditure arrangement on that one. The concern we then have is that what it would lead to is that instead, even of getting what you are getting, it will just say, okay, cut here. I'll be honest, personally, on my own, I don't think the Department of Mineral Resources, especially on the delicate and critical areas, there should be a cut. But how do we move for that motivation? Is precisely if you can help and give. Because when you come here, you are not coming here to just account. You are also coming here to say, please help us in this fashion. So that when we go there, we can have better arguments to say, instead of cutting, bring more. But if we are sitting, that's an example, if we are sitting with 54 million surplus, at a face value, it then says, no, why do you have to give this? Because they have got a surplus, and they have got capacity to generate. So they will expect you have got 54 this year as a surplus. They'll expect you to do more than 54 the following financial year. I'm just making that example. So that, to me, are those critical issues that I think they are important. The last one, I think we must agree, we accept the explanation. You are not the black sheep. I know people, they like my... In one meeting we have a family, someone stood up and said, I know I'm the black sheep here. And then said, no, but we can't say anything that represents a black sheep. But I think we must say, it's better sometimes to preempt danger when it's coming than to explain when it has already occurred. Because the chances of being someone believing you, who are saying, the chances of someone believing you are not the same when you alert what could be the problem. Because now we're dealing with an aftermath. We understand the area where you are located. I think the last point, I like the way you presented. I think to me, your report, but it then, you see, when you do something, there could be more demand, not negative. It then raises other questions where you are located, and I think again, it may not be in your field. Maybe to get who, you see, when you say foreign nationals, I'll be honest, we wouldn't know who are those, how many of those are from over rivers, and how many of those are from overseas. You know, when I say over rivers and overseas, how many of those? So let's, so that we can draw that distinction. But also look at their areas of location. And look at, because I think some of the entities, the points that honorable members were raising, some of the areas people that are working on are quite sensitive. I'm not suspecting anyone with you, but some of the information that you are dealing with is a very sensitive information. To what extent are you protecting that information, and in what form, so that we can know? So I think to me, maybe you may not be able to present some of those things now. You may be able to present them at a different moment where it comes in. I saw, for an example, that Umabuza is sitting there. It goes back to my question of the proximity. But the number of meetings that he is attending, I'm not sure whether it assists the entity. No, not in a negative way, because this is a DDG who could be actively busy and therefore unable to make a focus, or whether the arrangement is simple because by relationship, that's where CGS is supposed to be interacting more frequently. I'm just saying, though, that relationship issue is very important. You want to help.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chairperson. And,
no, this is the only and I can't see.
No, thanks, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable members, colleagues, and good morning once again. No, I think we take the issues that were raised by other members in that spirit. I think what we'll have to do when we come back, the issues, we amplify them more, including the issues of the imperatives in Ntate Matlala. We strive to ensure that with our strategic plan, we look at all the government imperatives. So I think it's a matter of reporting where we'll look at. In terms of governance issues, Honorable Chairperson, and the makeup of the board, currently it's based on the legislation itself. If you look at CGS, it has its own legislation. It's similar with MINTEC, the Mine Health and Safety Council. It's clear on how the makeup should be. But I must emphasize the fact that there is a process that government has initiated to look at all the SOCs, the state-owned companies or entities, and how to continuously improve on the issues of governance and the other issues that Uche has raised in terms of remuneration. There is a work that is being done there. But currently, in terms of remuneration as well, we are guided by the Treasury directives that helps on it. And lastly, from our side, we've taken note of all those issues. It's a matter of we continuously engage and align ourselves with the entities. However, what is important as well is for government to be represented in the state-owned entities, the main objective is to ensure that there's alignment with the strategic direction of government. So I think that's the main issue. But there is a current process that has been initiated by government to really look at this. But one thing that I've also raised elsewhere yesterday, Chairperson, is the issue of funding. We agree that the state-owned entities, especially CGS, MINTEC, and somewhat the Mine Health and Safety Council, they must find a way, and also the regulator, to generate revenue. But some of them, we believe that they are a research council. I think government, we believe that should intentionally find a way of funding the state entities, including Council for Geoscience. There's a huge potential that if Council for Geoscience is in future is properly funded, I think they will help us to generate more revenue for our economy because of the critical work that they are doing. Similarly with MINTEC as well, we believe that if they are properly funded, I think ultimately it assists government in generating more revenue or supports the GDP. So I think that's the assistance that, as we come here, Chair, and as colleagues, will amplify it more, as we are, and I've heard Honourable Lorimer was saying, look, what are the proposals that we have made? We fully agree. We meet together before we make the proposals to Treasury. So, but we'll definitely need the support of the honourable members on these issues for us, because it's very strategic that they are properly funded. Because if they are not, then we'll find ways of how we make up. And we spoke about the issue of communication. We fully agree as well, Dr. Matlala. But the biggest challenge is funding as well. We must be honest when we come here to you to say we should not say we're going to do it, and you'll ask again why it's not done. So I think for us it's very important that we must highlight the honest truth, but we try to communicate better. We fully agree. But I think funding is still one of the challenges. Whilst we are trying to improve on efficiencies, but funding is still a challenge for us. But I think especially for our entities, it's important that we, including the regulator, by the way, and probably Mesigalalo will touch on the issues. But, you know, I think the trader as well. So it's important that they are properly financially supported to push forward the national imperative. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, Babomsis, if the chair can make that mistake, you are allowed to do it. So I won't be that type to say you can't make. No, honourable members, I think it's okay. Just the point that we have said. If you can, it's not whether the committee wouldn't want to motivate, but it says give us a basis to which we can argue for that motivation. So the CFO has made that commitment. Someone who carries finances can then not be trusted to honor the commitment he's making. So we will keep that. But as we have said, it's simple because we know, not to say other entities are not important, but we understand the critical nature of the entity on what it is doing. Maybe down the line, when we deal and prepare the report itself, the issues that you are raising, we will have to find a way to what extent can we accommodate them as part of the submission, including because, as I said, in order for anyone to do effective oversight, knowledge is quite critical. So that information, as long as we are able to understand, not take things for granted. Common sense is not always common. That's the challenge. But I think for now, we as I've said, some of those issues probably might be cutting across, not just in one entity. Okay. I'm not sure. Then we will have to take just a 5 minute stretch break and allow, because CJS presented and then the house went dark in terms of the IT, so we'll try and help the ones that are coming. President, CEO, I'm told it's you after this. Sure.